Okay, welcome to Nature Space with Haythes, where we explore connections with nature, wildlife, and definitely the spirit of adventure today. I'm Simon King, and today I'm joined by Nick Ray from Life Afloat. Nick's based in Tobermory on the Isle of Mull in Scotland. Nick is a sea kayaker, adventurer, writer, and a mental health advocate, and he's a voice for suicide prevention. So his remarkable solo sea kayaking expeditions around Scotland highlight his passion for adventure and his commitment to living life as a great adventurer. So you're very welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Simon. That's a great intro. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a great story. And we've just been saying before I hit record, really, I'm looking at your website now, which we'll put a link in the show notes for people to go to. But while they're listening to this, perhaps they might want to go to lifeafloat.co.uk and then they can see some of these wonderful images that you get to see every day. What an office window you've got there.
Very lucky. I mean, you can't go wrong living on the Isle of Mull anywhere. It's really beautiful.
Fantastic. Well, let's hear a bit more about. Can we start? I thought it would be nice, really, just for our listeners to get to know a little bit more about your background and talk a bit more about your adventure philosophy, how it came about. So I'm just wondering, Nick, could you share with us perhaps your journey into becoming an adventure enthusiast and your philosophy behind kind of embracing this adventure at all stages of life? You know, how did this all start?
I think when I was about 2 or 3 years old, I think, when I grew up in Africa, in the country we know as Zimbabwe, and I lived there till I was, as a youngster, until I was about in my early teens, and then we moved over to the UK. But when I lived in Africa, my father introduced me to the bush, of course, and we spent a lot of time together out there as a family, and particularly my dad sort of taking me, you know, we just walking really and learning to be present in the wild space. So incredibly meaningful experience of sitting high on rocky outcrops, just watching the African sunrise, learning how to track animals, learning how to walk silently through the bush. Learning to identify animals, learning to identify bird life from their sound and their, you know, their plumage, and just being present, you know, just the secret of patience, because you know, nature is nature and doesn't appear as on order as we would like sometimes, and it's just that joy of just being able to sit and be immersed in a wild space, and then be overjoyed when things happen around, you know, for example, wildlife wandering past, or, you know, seeing something, you know, quite dramatic. And I carried that forward to, obviously, to my life, early life in the UK. I never really did very well at my academic studies, but I did very well at my extracurricular studies, and then found my way into working for Outward Bound in my very early 20s. And Outward Bound is the organization that's synonymous with adventure education for young people and adults, I suppose. And I worked as an instructor for Outward Bound for many years in Wales and in the Lake District. And then I went back out to Africa with Outward Bound, and then came back to the UK, then went back to Africa and back to the UK. So, you know, I just followed a path of adventure in my professional life, but always enjoying personal adventures. And then in my later years, I kind of decided to take a step out of the career pathway, I suppose. And my wife and I decided to give up everything and sell everything. And we bought a yacht, and we decided to just live on a yacht on the west coast of Scotland. And we lived on a yacht for 7 years, and I just odd-jobbed. I worked as a boatman and in a boatyard, and just really enjoyed the freedom that this provided, you know, not having to chase a career anymore. And then from that emerged my ideas of having bigger adventures. So in 2015, I paddled around Scotland for the first time. And then 2018, I did the Three Peaks by kayak. And then last year, or the year before last year, I set off on my big 1 year journey around Scotland.
Amazing.
Yeah, August.
Come on to that. What a feat that must be.
Yeah.
So those early formative years that you spent in Africa, learning to almost be a I heard the term, and well, the phrase was coined back in the 50s by a chap called Maxwell Knight, who would talk about being a nature detective. But it very much sounded, as you were explaining there, you know, you're back in Africa and you're taking a moment to listen, to observe, to be calm, to be quiet, and just see what happens around you in nature. Yeah. That sounds wonderful.
Yes, and I think the thing that I carry forward into my life, and certainly, you know, I experienced again on this journey, you know, very much so, was that sense of curiosity. So just being present, but also wondering about, you know, what's unfolding around me and what I'm observing, and then paying attention to what I'm sensing as well. So that, you know, I think we often look at ourselves as humans now in our modern state as being disconnected from nature. But I think if we immerse ourselves enough in nature, we find that we are incredibly connected and that we are part of the ecosystem. And that if we pay attention to our senses, that we are animals, and we have those abilities to see what's occurring around us and to fit in and to feel a sense of belonging. And that then enables us to be more in tune with the possibility of experiencing, you know, the natural wonders, for example, seeing a whale or a dolphin or spotting an eagle or whatever it might be, because we've allowed ourselves to be brought into that present moment and to be part of nature. And I think that's what I learned as a youngster, and I kind of forgot it as I went into my adventure phase. You know, high adventure, sort of paddling rivers and rock climbing, and forgetting my connection to nature. Although I was very much part of nature, I kind of forgot that sense of wonder. And then as I entered my later mid years and my later years, reconnecting with that sense of wonder and that sense of curiosity, and again allowing myself to experience that childlike wonder that I experienced when I was, you know, heading towards my teens. Mm-hmm. You know, that my parents were great about letting me be feral, really. They just let me run free. But that allowed me to just really wonder about what was there, what was around the next corner, what was up that tree, what was in that bush.
Yes.
And if I sat here by this path leading down to the river, would I see anything walking down it, and things like that. And so that's brought me into where I am now, really.
Yes. Do you find that we're only just beginning to understand the, you know, the healing powers of nature? I mean, it was interesting you mentioned about being present and the way you explained it. I thought of back to things like mindfulness, for example, of just this moment, this grounded moment that we rush through life getting from A to B.
Yeah.
You know, when you think back to some of the messages that the Victorians gave us and so on, which was about that process of getting from A to B, and they enjoyed, I know it's become an overused term, the journey, you know, and so on. It's almost become a little bit of an Americanism and so on for us. And yet that important process of getting from A to B is full of magic, isn't it, really? I mean, I often see, and at this time of the year, you know, you have our famous actors and actresses and so on, or actors, who are winning these magnificent prizes, and yet probably the next day they maybe wonder, is that what it was all about? And yet their whole struggle and their fight and flight process, the journey, is really where the magic is. And it's interesting to hear you talk about the healing powers, because there's more and more science, you know, even I believe the NHS are starting to look at people being connected to nature as a way of helping them heal, you know, wounds and so on. Can you talk about that? I mean, what do you think this is? Obviously, you were awoken to this very, very early in the early stages, and you, I guess, your journey. You talk about adventure, and it sounds to me then it's quite solo. I'm in this adventurous phase for me, and yet now you're in this adventure phase. Phase to share and to help others. And so that is that where this has been turned 360 degree?
I think so. I mean, I've always been, I think it's been in my DNA to guide people through the outdoor experience. You know, when I worked for Outward Bound, the great thing about Outward Bound and what I learned from Outward Bound, it wasn't so much about the experience, it was what the experience offered us. So, you know, what lies within the experience, which, and that's where the power and the magic happens.
Yes.
And, you know, so sometimes that's an unconscious process because, you know, when you go out and you go out for a good walk and you come back and you feel invigorated, but you haven't really consciously thought about it. It just works.
Yes.
And then moving towards that sort of reflective and sort of front loading the experience, you know, so I feel like I need a break. I need to chill out. I need to get out into nature. You go out and you go for a walk or you sit by a pond or you sit by a river, but you do it with purpose. And then you bring yourself in and you practice mindfulness. Maybe you haven't been taught about mindfulness, but somehow we innately do it as humans. We just bring ourselves to the present. And I think, in our modern life, you know, we kind of reinvent things. You know, I think this whole process of nature being a curative environment or experience has been around for millennia. I think, you know, we just kind of rediscover it, and it's generational as well. I think, you know, as younger people come through, they discover it for themselves, and so they write about it and they talk about it and they speak into their generations. I suppose what I'm doing now, and because I've reached an age where I think I can refer to myself as being able to offer wisdom, and that's what I'm hoping to do more of, is to just share my wisdom, my life wisdom, which is exactly what we're talking about, and it's not based on any theory or any specific learning. It's just what I've acquired through my years of experience of living and, you know, some of my professional practice. I mean, I did train in psychotherapy and I, for a few years, I sort of integrated therapy in the outdoors in the very early stages of adventure therapy in Britain and nature therapy. But, you know, I moved away from that because of various reasons, because I just found it too, I suppose, too formulaic and, you know, too... Yes. Too boxed in. My approach is very much about the experience being free flowing and, I suppose, incredibly natural. Really, you know, it's just seeing what happens and not really not trying to create a process for the sake of creating a process or trying to identify it. You know, it's very much about reacting to what's occurring in the moment and gaining insights from that. And that's how I experience my own adventures.
Which is why we wanted to talk to you, really, because not only is the scenery breathtaking looking at your website, it does take your breath away. And yet, you know, again, when we're talking about mindfulness, being present and so on, one of the easiest things to do these days is to forget to actually breathe, take a proper breath of fresh air. And it is fresh at the moment. But I wonder whether you could, just for our listeners, really just tell us a little bit about, you know, what your favorite day looks like when your life aflow. You know, what does it look like? Can you paint that picture of that dramatic scenery in and around Tobermory in the Isle of Mull? What does it look like? What does it feel like? You know, what is it that makes you want to take that bracing challenge and go out there? Well, just put us in that scene, if you can, for a moment.
That's a great question. My life at the moment is very laptop oriented. I'm writing a book about my journey. So ironically, my outdoor journey has led me to very much an indoor one at the moment. And I'm feeling under a certain amount of pressure to produce the words and the pages and to write well. And so I'm actually finding myself disconnected from my landscape at the moment. But funnily enough, the other morning I was out in my kayak. I went out and scraped the ice off the boat and put it on the water, and I went for a paddle and immediately felt myself settling, literally settling into an easy rhythm of just existing, really. And there's simplicity in existence. It's absorbing everything around me. So where I live, Tobermory, we have this beautiful bay, Tobermory Bay. We've got the iconic Tobermory town frontage with the yellow, blue, and red buildings and other colourful buildings, with its high street along on the shorefront, and the harbour wall with the fishing boats tied up next to it with sailing boats on their moorings in the bay. Really picturesque and very much a living town as well. I mean, I'm pleased to say Tobermory is a vibrant community. And then you just paddle a few hundred metres away from that and further along the coast, and then there's a waterfall pouring off the top of a cliff. It falls about 30 metres straight down into the sea. And for me, that's like a magical spot. And I've often referred to it as a liminal space for me. It's where the fresh water meets the salt. It's a magical space.
Right.
And it evokes something of childlike wonder within me. It's like that tinkling sound that's like a permanent water feature. If I had a grand garden, that's what I'd recreate. You know, there's this beautiful water feature tumbling into the sea, and then paddling on for that, you go into a very quiet bay where there's another stream. And we have what we call Arras Park, which is like a beautifully wooded area with Scots pines and deciduous woodland. And often down that end, you might see otters, certainly lots of herons. And then further around the corner, we've actually got a couple of sea eagles nesting. So just moved into the area in the recent few years. So sometimes I'm lucky enough to see one of them sort of detach itself from its perch and swoop in over the island. And then we've got Carve Island, which kind of shelters Tobermory, which protects Tobermory Bay, and paddling through what we call the Dorlan, which is a gap into the Sound of Mull. And then you get this real sense of being out in the sea. And yes, you know, if it's choppy, that's where you'll experience the choppy waves. And again, that's often where I see more otters. There's often otters around there. And certainly there are a lot of seals, of course, as well. We've got harbour seals, common seals. We don't get the grey seals so far. And then maybe porpoises. I might see porpoises. And sometimes through two or three times a year, we'll get the common dolphins coming in, playing around, cleaning out the bay for fish, and then shooting out again. And then, you know, the Sound of Mull is a magical sound. It's the sound that connects the Firth of Lorne, which is a sort of a mystical seaway, delineates the island of Mull from the Scottish mainland. But if I head westwards, then I'm out into the magical area of the Outer Hebrides or the Inner Hebrides and the Small Isles or Col and Tyree. It's just incredible. And sometimes I'm out there and I could be the only human in that landscape. You know, it's if I go westwards and around to the west coast of Mull, sometimes there might be the odd creel boat, but certainly very few other ships or boats out there, particularly this time of year. And so there is that sense of isolation and that sense of solitude, which I find magical, really. Solitude is very important to me in the outdoors. And so I could go on. It's just one thing leads to another. There's so many choices. You know, often when I get to, there's a point called Ardmore Point, and I have a choice whether to paddle across to Ardnamurchan Headland, which if I went round that, then I'd have the beautiful Small Isles and beyond it, the Isle of Skye, and then the magic of the Northwest Highlands stretching out ahead of me. Or if I went southwest, then I've got Col and Tyree, and then the magical island of Staffa and Iona, and then round that you've got, you know, to the south you've got the wild Isle of Jura, and then Isla to the south. But it's just an incredible place for me. And having grown up in Africa with big landscapes and a sense of wildness, it's wonderful to be in a somewhere in Europe, you know, to enjoy this, a similar sense of wildness, big skies and a sense of solitude, human solitude. Yeah.
I can feel that. And I think I'm fully in the zone now. I think the Tobermory Mori Tourist Board are sending a check in the post right now. Yeah. I'm kind of wishing I'd worn my Harris tweed and I'm ready to continue on this adventure. You've set a lovely scene there. I'm glad you said about isolation, because I was thinking, crikey, you know, this is, you know, I had this wonderful image in my mind of turning back in the kayak and looking at Tobermory and, as you say, all those lovely different pastely painted buildings and so on. And then as you painted this picture that seemed to get more and more remote and exposed, this was the word that came to my mind. You know, whether you've ever felt this, because I agree, it's nice to have those moments of just being able to just be in your own space for a few moments.
Mm.
But also, you know, this is quite a serious thing, isn't it? A lot can go wrong. And, yeah, so you know.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm wary of using the word maverick. I'm not gung-ho. I'm not reckless, but I do enjoy the challenge that paddling alone provides me. So that's the other angle of what I enjoy about my outdoor experience, is that frisson of excitement, really, you know, that the element of feeling fear.
Yes.
And with that comes the whole process of making decisions, deciding what choice to take, what route to take. And then at the end of the day, having come through it all, is just that sense of accomplishment. And again, yes, that deep sense of connection. That and what I learn every time is that that nature is actually benevolent. You know, the sea is benevolent. The sea, you know, we use words to say it's, you know, it's awesome, or, you know, the sea is out to get you, or, you know, there's a language that we often use to describe how we pit ourselves against the elements. And really, for me, it's quite the opposite. It's about immersing myself in the elements, whatever state they may be in, but they're not out to get me. They're not out to teach me a lesson. It's about me being comfortable in their presence, whatever mood they're in. And there I am, yes, using, you know, a human attribution.
I see.
And so I've learned a huge amount about myself in how I can keep myself safe, but gain a huge amount from that experience and be comfortable and find pleasure, feel fear and recognize courage within ourselves. I think that's a really useful yes, awareness, because often we do need to be courageous sometimes when we're faced with you know, life altering decisions, for example, or you know, choices that we may find fearful. Maybe it's about changing a job, or
yes,
you know, having a difficult conversation with somebody, or whatever it might be. So this is what I'm gaining from my experiences, is these awarenesses, which, mm-hmm, you know, I kind of store away in my internal library, in the hope that that when I need them most, I can reconnect with them and reinform myself that I have what it takes to actually, you know, to face certain situations in my life. And sometimes, you know. And you know, I'm gonna weave in my mental health. Sometimes, you know, I recognize that I can't do things on my own, so I do need support, and therefore, you know, I need to maybe speak to my wife about how I'm feeling or what I'm experiencing, yes, or access, you know, my mental health services and ask for, okay, support in that way. But generally, you know, I'm happy in my solitude in the outdoors, purely because, you know, there's so much to gain from that experience.
Okay. I think that leads us nicely into, so we've got this philosophy really of, and it's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes we're saying how we pick our words, the obvious ones, you know, whether it's half full or a half empty. Here you're talking about whether we're not pitting ourselves against nature. We're working, you know, alongside, working with what nature's offering and kind of going with the flow. Mm. I suppose, which is we have a river canoe cleaner who does great work cleaning our local chalk streams. Wonderful chap, and he's got a great community behind him. And he talks about going with the flow and so on. And he's a mental health ambassador as well. But I want us to lead into, because is this right? We have a 12-month solo sea kayak journey around Scotland.
Yes.
And so in terms of your own company and you being exposed, that sounds to me like what's in the top 10 of ways to be exposed to nature, a 12-month solo kayak journey around Scotland. What happened? What made you do that? And what kind of impact has it had on you, really?
It's really funny because I've been obviously been writing about this, and I've spent ages trying to remember the actual thought process that led to the decision to do this, and I to be honest, I can't remember the prompts. I paddled around Scotland in 2015, but I'd journeyed around there at a breakneck speed. I'd paddled to all the Scottish lifeboat stations, the RNLI lifeboat stations, as a fundraiser for the RNLI. So there were 47 of those stations at the time, and that included the Outer Hebrides, Orkney and Shetland, as well as mainland Scotland, although I didn't paddle out to Shetland. You know, I got a ferry out there. But I did that journey in 4 months. So really, I just was, you know, paddling with my head down and just covering long distances. And I had the feeling that I was passing by a coastline that I'd love to have explored much more slowly. And it just remained with me. And then in 2019, I was very ill, and I made an attempt on my life, and that was a huge, dramatically powerful moment in my life. And ever since then, thankfully, you know, as I've recovered after a long period in hospital, and then my recovery after that, I've felt that I've wanted to have a profound experience. I've wanted to get out into the wild again, but not have like a peak adventure, but to have enjoy a slow adventure. Mm. And I've always been fascinated by people who live an incredibly simple life, or have journeyed, or journey as part of their life. You know, that, you know, I remember being fascinated by the stories of, as they were known in old days, like tramps, people who wandered the countryside, who men who had no fixed abode, and that sense of being free. I think, you know, that sense of being free to make choices about where I would go next, where I would stay, where I would hang out, where I would explore. So it just happened. And then, of course, I was coming up to my 59th year, and it just suddenly fell into place. You know, why not paddle my 59th year? So the day that I turned 59, I would leave Tobermory, and the day that I turned 60, I would return to Tobermory, and I would see it as my rite of passage into my 60s. That's the way it turned out. And so the journey was very much about a celebration of life, because, you know, I continue to live with suicidal ideation. It's a dreadful experience to have to live with. And I, even though, you know, I have these incredible experiences out in the wild and a very fulfilling life, my depression leads me down that pathway. And I wanted to celebrate life and to reinforce that there is a life to be lived and in the best way that I know how, which is to take myself off into a landscape I'm incredibly comfortable, camping wild and living wild and living simply. It's second nature to me. I can't say it's special, but it is special, and I recognize it's special. So I feel incredibly privileged and incredibly fortunate to have had the opportunity and the means to do this. You know, I've got the experience to paddle on my own. You know, I'm an accomplished paddler. I'm grateful for being physically healthy and fit. But the struggle that I carry with me is my fight with depression those are all the threads that sort of wove the tapestry of this journey. And the journey, actually the journey sort of unfolded on the first day. I didn't realize that, you know, once the story sort of grabbed the headlines, that people would be mesmerized by it. And I was just totally blown away by that. And it suddenly became this incredible community driven experience where people were checking in with me every day and wanting to know where I was and how I was doing. And, you know, obviously my photographs and my little video snippets were what people enjoyed as well. And I think the backstory obviously resonated for a lot of people. And, the whole experience became far bigger and more meaningful than I ever considered. And it still does, even to this day. Yeah.
And it's amazing, isn't it, that in a way, you know, the paradox of today is that we live in this technical world where we can, as you say, you know, part of your successful or your the success of your storytelling is now, unfortunately, that you find yourself at a computer more than you'd like to be. And that's the paradox, talking about the wonderful world that's outside, you know, your window and so on. And this is where we become, you know, unfortunately, we lose our connection again with the natural world. But to share this story, I think, is really unselfish. And again, that's why, you know, Angela, who picks our guest for the podcast, said, you know, I want us to talk to Nick. He's got a wonderful story. And I suppose, I mean, for us as a bird food company, you know, we know that there's science there that says, you know, you can see, and your images that you share on your website through, if you videos through YouTube and so on, actually can help people from the comfort of their own home. And some people it is comfort, and some people, unfortunately, you know, cannot leave the home, you know, for health reasons and so on. Mm-hmm. And certainly during bad weather as well, it's not very easy to get out and about. So being able to see the wide open spaces, being able to follow you on your journey can actually help people. It can help people. I want us to come back to the mental health if we can in a moment. But I think, can you share some of those most memorable moments and perhaps some of the challenges you face? Because this is a solo journey. This is you. You know, and nature is amazing, but it can also be a cruel governor.
Yeah, I think, I was prepared for significant challenges. And as I went into autumn, I was beginning to worry about being able to see my way through the winter. You know, having grown up in Africa, winter's not my best time of year. And yet, I found winter to be probably one of the highlights of the whole experience, because although winter was cold and was demanding of my fortitude, mm-hmm. you know, I needed to grit my teeth and get into my damp clothing in the morning when there was ice and snow. and paddled, you know, through water. Sometimes, you know, with ice on the surface, there were a few days when it was icy enough for there to be ice on the surface of the sea in the sheltered bays. I found it to be actually a hugely regenerative experience, because I just sort of adopted the pace of nature 100%. So I'd be getting into my tent when it got dark about 4 o'clock. And then by 5, 6 o'clock, I'd be asleep, and I wouldn't wake up until about 8 the next morning. And that became the rhythm of my life through the winter months. And what was lovely about the winter was that I had, you know, talk about this landscape being devoid of humans. Well, in wintertime, there's even fewer people about. And yet the wildlife was still there. The otters were still there. The eagles were still there. The, you know, the birds and, you know, the gulls. Obviously, the puffins and, you know, the summertime visitors weren't there. But I was, you know, felt very much part of the landscape, and very much part of the wild landscape. And then, of course, moving through and then watching spring emerge and just seeing how long it took for spring to emerge. And it seemed like a particularly long spring last year. And then all of a sudden, there was one morning when I woke up and got into my kayak and I literally noticed the greenery of the grass. All of a sudden, it became summertime, and then there was warmth, and then there was length to the days, and my paddling became freer. I was paddling longer through the day, and all the while, yes, there were challenges. You know, there are the tides to contend with. There were some days when there were heavy seas. There were days when there were gales. There were nights when there were gales. I was always facing those challenges, and each time coming through. And you know, there was one day on the north coast where I paddled into Thurso Bay, and the sea, the Atlantic swell was 3 meters high. So when I was in the trough, the top of the wave was 3 meters above me. It was monstrous, and I had my heart in my mouth. You know, I knew that I couldn't put a paddle stroke wrong, and yet it was the time of my life. And I just, everything came together. I was vibrant, and the atmosphere was cacophonous.
Felt alive.
It was just the sea was surging against these high cliffs and booming up in massive eruptions of spray and spume.
Yes.
And I was in my wee little boat, sort of meters away, but feeling completely in control.
Yes.
Knowing that I had to pay attention, you know, that, and it wasn't that the sea was out to get me. It was just my own frailty. I just needed to be aware of my thought processes and my ability. And then that whole, you know, like I said before, that whole idea of choosing a route and deciding where to go, and then eventually where to land and how to land. And then at the end of the day, just feeling so alive because I'd done it. And I could have, you know, I remember I could have, you know, looked out of the tent and I saw how big the sea was, and I could have said, oh no, I'll just knock it on the head today. I won't go. But I'm, you know, there's that, you know, that whole thing of, you know, having faith in myself and putting myself out there.
So Nick,
there was a time when I launched and huge waves, they did crash into me and nearly knocked me over. I lost vital equipment. I lost a camera and recording equipment because you know the waves were big. But generally, though, you know, I suppose because it was a slow adventure, because I could travel at my own pace, I didn't have to put myself in harm's way. But when I look back at some of my videos, I was making choices. You know, I was going behind, you know, channels where you know, the sea was raging against the rocks, and to all intents and purposes, it looks, you know, incredibly risky and dangerous, but at the time, because I was feeling so comfortable in my environment, you know, I felt able to face those challenges, really. Mm. Yeah.
All those years of you being, you know, that connection with nature. Yeah. The interesting thing is from a, you know, I'm not a psychotherapist. I'm not a mental health, you know, practitioner, but, you know, here we are, we've got this amazing story of you going through the personal challenge that you've went through before this adventure. Mm. And here you are at some points, if not fighting for your life, you're making decisions to for your life, as you say, you know, paddle in the wrong place, take the wrong route, and unfortunately, you know, this could end if not, you know, it wouldn't have had the same happy ending, obviously. Mm. And it's amazing, I suppose, that you know, this is the thing, isn't it? If adventure is in your spirit, if you're an explorer, if you've got that mindset, you can't switch it off, can you?
No, I'm always thinking about what the next, you know, what the next adventure is, or just, you know, just looking at, it's that sense of curiosity. It's that, you know, what's possible, really. But what you said there, I think that is the power of the experience, you know, is that that's the metaphor, you know, is that I was out there, I was making decisions to keep myself safe. Not, you know, not because I was fearful. It was just, you know, I didn't want, in that moment, I didn't want to die, you know. Mm. And so, you know, when I'm faced with a mental health crisis, when I'm particularly low and I feel exhausted and all my thoughts and energy seems to be sapping away towards what seems to be an inevitable black hole, that's when I reconnect with the power of that experience and remind myself that I have it within me to make a decision to continue to live.
Yes.
Even though things may be extremely challenging, because at the end of it, there will be the reward and the reward will be knowing that I came through and each time I come through, I'm wiser and I'm richer. And I think that's why, maybe, you know, because I feel like I can share my wisdom now, that maybe that's why some of my words resonate with people. Mm. Because I think, you know, when I was younger, I didn't have the capacity to recognize that, you know, I always remember when I worked for Outward Bound Estdale, fell running was the big thing at Outward Bound Estdale in the Lake District. So this is when you run over the mountains with, you know, just your pair of running shoes and you just run free. And used to enter a lot of running races, and it was always the elder runners who would win. Mm-hmm. And it was a well-known fact that in fell running, it's an older person's sport, because people have the wisdom to work with that sense of tenacity and that sense of self-awareness about, you know, about pacing yourself and about knowing that although this may be difficult, then things will get easier.
Yes.
And when we're younger, we sort of shoot from the sprinting block and we go hell for leather, and then all of a sudden we find ourselves wiped out by the first slope, but we press on, and then, you know, yes, but our strength begins to lag, but we still press on. We don't learn to pace ourselves. And then all of a sudden, slowly but surely, the older runner will creep up behind you and then trot past with a cheerful wave and say, I'll see you at the finish. And I think that's where I'm at in my life. And I think that's why, you know, I particularly enjoy my outdoor experiences, because I'm more open now to the awarenesses that I'm gaining from these experiences.
And the thing I take away from listening to that is this, I mean, apart from the tortoise and the hare, we know where that goes, but it's very true. But it's the important message is also that this too shall pass. You know, we have good and we have bad days. Yeah, and if we can only just get through that one day when it's bad, then, you know, the next day can be better. But this, and I think you're also highlighting to me that, you know, we're in charge of our kind of our actions and our attitudes.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, it's a lot of it is out of our control. Certainly yeah. when you are, you know, in a kayak and you are in face with 3 meter waves, the only thing is in your control is your actions and your attitude, and the rest of that is out of your control.
I think Karen.
No.
I was just going to say, you know, if we were to sort of take a sideways step, you know, for many of your listeners who are interested in the outdoors and who have a passion for nature, you know, what we're experiencing at the moment with climate change, and, you know, we're seeing these dreadful floods, you know, because of the storms that we're experiencing nowadays because of climate change, and maybe that sense of hopelessness and that sense of it's all beyond me, it's out of my control. But really, there is a similar message there. It's like if we choose to live our life as we would like others to live it, you know, in terms of awareness and to I don't know how I'm going to say this, but yeah, I suppose what I'm saying is that, you know, if I was to talk about what I learned from the outdoors within a mental health context, it's applicable to so many other scenarios. And I'm thinking about our sense of hopelessness, maybe, you know, with regard to the climate chaos, and maybe seeing our government making choices that we wouldn't support with regard to the environmental practices and future plans. And then we have people who inspire us. You know, I've seen your earlier guests, you know, that who are very well known for being passionate and advocates for wildlife and nature. Yeah.
We've been really lucky to have some wonderful guests, you know, Yellow Williams, Chris Packham, Paul Rose, who's with the National Geographic Pristine Seas project. Wonderful chap, and talked to us about the explorer mindset. My son was helping and still helps edit the podcast, and he really turned a light on for us, really, in terms of that explorer mindset. And you're echoing many of the things that Paul's saying. The problem, I think, I try not to pass on my point of view too much in these podcasts, but the problem I think we have with climate changes is that there is so much attention on what is creating the climate change. Is it us? Is it the government? Is it conspiracy? If we just for a moment think about this from a nature's perspective, what really matters is that the climate is changing so fast that nature can't adjust fast enough.
Mm.
And that's the problem, you know. And if we really come at it from that perspective, it kind of course it matters what's creating the problem, because we're not really going to be able to diagnose the solutions and so on.
Yeah.
But what we all have to accept is, and you must have seen it in where you are, and certainly Paul Rose tells the story of even at the Rothera Antarctic Station, that of seeing plastic carrier bags and not just microplastics, but plastics freely floating around the ocean, and the changes that he's seen over the years as well. So I find it really impossible for me to say it's not happening. But I think what is definitely we can see is that nature is changing. We could look at the garden bird supplies, the garden bird watch. We could look at the garden bird watch data, and we can see a huge and steady decline of you know, garden bird populations.
Yeah.
We can look all over the world, the wildlife, the WWF's Living Planet report, see huge declines in biodiversity. And we can also understand that projects that we need to look at and embrace in more detail, like rewilding, you know, that have the potential to help reduce the worst of climate change and biodiversity loss, but only if we get our heads together and accept that we're in this together. We've got to do it together. That's enough of my personal point of view.
No, it's a huge subject. And I think, I suppose, I'm not coming from an unscientific background as I do, or and non-academic, but I'm particularly interested in our relationship. And that goes right back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of our conversation, about how I learned to to have a relationship with the wild. And I think really it's about how we relate with each other, you know, yeah. And how we support each other through this incredible change, and yes. also, you know, and inspire others maybe to
yes.
look at their relationships with the wild. Yeah.
Nick, I don't talk about it really. I don't think I've ever spoken about it outside of my family, but I lost my younger brother, you know, in 23 or so years ago to suicide. Yeah. And there isn't a day goes by I don't think about him. It was a huge loss, still is a huge loss, feels like a huge loss every day. And I think, you know, we should talk about these things. And I think the world is better for people like you in it, who are using their experience, sharing their journey, but not just, but helping people come up with examples, ideas, whatever we want to call it, giving them the tools, the resources, the inspiration, you know, someone just to say, look, Nick does this. This is how he does it. I'll find my way as well. So I think hats off to you. I think the world is better for someone like you in it, sharing their journey.
Thank you.
You know, can we talk about the future then? Really, you know, where do we go for? How do you top this? We're writing a book.
I'm attempting to write the book. I have to share at the moment. I've come through Christmas and enter the new year with particularly low energy. I'm not feeling very well at the moment, you know, with regard to my mental health, and you know, I've not engaged with social media over the last 2 weeks. So my sense of self is challenged a lot of the time, and so you know, I get excited when I think about the book when I'm feeling okay. But at the moment, I'm thinking, oh, just a waste of space. You know, what's the point? You know, you can't write. You know, you're writing trash, and you know, it's all the negative thoughts as one could imagine. And so my aspirations, you know, then I find I limit my aspirations. I think, you know, that all I need to do is just keep my head low, just exist and try and, you know, just lead a quiet life. But then the adventurer within me, the person who's curious and the person who is always wanting to engage with life, you know, will continually come up with ideas. And so I think between now and what inevitably will be another adventure, I'm not really decided exactly what it might be, but what I hope to do is just continue to share, but I want to do it in a more structured way, maybe. So I would like to maybe get onto the speaking circuit. So if any of your listeners are, you know, your audience are interested in me speaking, you know, at an event, I think just getting out there really. And obviously it's a huge privilege to be invited to have a conversation with you on your podcast. And I just want to probably write more, so you know, get back into writing my blog, and I'm going to do some more kind of YouTube-y type stuff. I think YouTube's quite a useful medium, you know, just to share my experience of kayaking but just share my thinking really. And then, you know, who knows, I mean, if I do write a book and it's, you know, there's interest in it, then maybe something will follow out of that as well. And just to continue to be myself. I think I really don't want to become I know I have my own personality, but I don't want to become a personality, if that makes any sense. And I found it actually quite challenging towards the end of my journey. People were saying to me, I've never met anybody so famous before, and I would never think of myself, you know, I really balk at that sense that people would put me on a pedestal for any reason. And and I know I do have to accept that paddling for a year around Scotland is an extraordinary experience.
Yes.
but it is ordinary in many senses compared to what everybody lives in their everyday lives. And I think, you know, if I was to think about somebody who's existing on below the minimum wage, living in an inner city environment, I would find that extraordinary.
Yes,
yeah. And for them, it's incredibly ordinary and difficult. And so we each have our own powerful stories to tell. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have conversations. I think that's the exciting bit, is having conversations. And that's one of the things I thrived on actually in my journey, was meeting people and having conversations.
Absolutely. There's a few things to, if I can unpack that. One is, you know, we are here at the Bird Food Center. We had our big journey really has been moving. We've recently moved we moved in here in March last year, and we moved from an industrial estate to an industrial estate, but we've purchased more land than we needed, not to be greedy, but because we want to hand as much of this space back to nature. We didn't want to do it on a farm, because that would be easy, and actually we'd be reducing the biodiversity as soon as we headed there. We wanted to do it in an industrial setting, and we also wanted to do so that our customers, nature, and our team here can actually stay connected with nature. So for example, we've got two ponds, and so instead of having drainage, we had a wildlife attenuation pond, and we have a pond that the team, we have decking that goes over the pond, and from their canteen, the kitchen area, they can sit and take a break with nature. And we'll be planting, you know, our planting schemes will be planted with nature positivity in mind. And so on. So we think some of the things you've mentioned, if we're coming to work and we can't work from home, which has its own challenges these days to be hybrid as well. So that doesn't mean everything's easy when you work from home. But if we're going to come to work, let's try and make this business a place where people want to come. And one of the other things we're going to do is we're going to open the business more and more to events. Right. So we're going to be inviting people to come and give talks here. And after this, I'm going to mention to Angela that she gets in contact with you and perhaps see whether we can maybe set something up so you can come and give us a talk from here at the Bird Food Centre in Lincolnshire. We'll open it up to our audience, and even more people can hear about your amazing journey. And I would say about the writing element is that, I write quite a few things. I have my own blog, it's called The Frightened Place of Nature, and I write that with a veterinary professor friend of mine, and that's about nature. And I do the same thing as you. I stare at that horrible blank page, questioning everything that within me that is not good enough. No one's going to read it, and so on. And I think that I really, really hope that you can get through the other end, because really, your ability as a writer may be wonderful. I've certainly read things online. They all seem very, very good to me. But your ability as a writer is second place to your ability as a communicator, as somebody who's out there with their explorer mindset, sharing their story. That's what really matters. That's what resonates. That's from me to you. I really hope you can break through that, because I think people will want to read it.
Yeah, thank you. I have a book that I wrote about my 2015 trip. That's a self-published book, which sadly is only available on Amazon. But so I kind of know that I can do it. It's a bit like kayaking. Sometimes I know I can do it, but sometimes that self-belief is not there. And I think maybe because this journey was enjoyed by so many people.
Yes.
I'm putting myself under pressure to probably be a bit more artful with my discussion, my descriptions, and probably a bit more literary oriented. But thank you very much for that encouragement. And
you're more than welcome. And the other thing is, you know, you just be who you are. You know, talking to a recorder, somebody can always help you write it out. You know, that's the easiest way. I'm sure we'll get lots of comments from people who listen to this and just say, what a lovely chat and what a great story. And they want to hear on your next trip, perhaps we can even pop something on the website where we can track you, you know, where you're out and things and show people. We'll put some links to your website. Obviously, when your book's out and about, we'll make sure people know about that. But as I say, I'll get Angela to make contact. And if we can talk you into coming down to Lincolnshire,
I'd love
pull
to
pull you away from Tobermory. you're welcome here. You're welcome here anytime as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Can we talk just a little bit before? I've taken enough of your time, really. I'm sure I have. But just before we go, what about? So obviously, you know, we talked about people who maybe can't get out and about. What about, we talked before about the bird feeders being filled and things. What do you get from that? You know, even when you're writing now, do you look into the garden and see nature, wildlife, birds?
No. One of my greatest pleasures is the wee wildlife pond that we dug in our wee garden. We've only got a small garden here, even though we live on this expansive Isle of Mull. And so we dug a pond and we just filled it with things that we picked off, you know, around locally. And so it just became a haven, and immediately the frogs moved in, the birds use it. And it's my joy in the summertime. You know, we've got irises and we've got lily pads, and it's just wonderful to see the scooters on the top, the surface, and just to look into it. We dug a bog garden as well, so there's that sense of being somewhere wild within the few hundred, you know, the few square meters that we've got. So I think the connection, we don't have to have big adventures, we don't have to go out deep into the wilds to feel that connection. It's just that sense of finding a place that we feel comfortable in. It might be some people don't have gardens, so it might be a place in a park or a favorite walk, or you know, somewhere on the canal, you know, and it could be just where the canal bends, for example. So you just wonder what's around the next corner. In the summertime, you've got the rushes and you've got all the birds, and then in the wintertime it may be a bit more dank, but nonetheless still wreathed in mist. And you know, there's all these special places, and I think finding those places and knowing that we connect with them, and just again just being aware and just opening ourselves to the possibility of those connections, and allowing ourselves to be childlike. I think that's one of the things I learned as well on this journey is reconnecting with my inner child. And I often joked with people that I became 15 again so many times, when you know I would just be bubbling away with excitement. I mean, I remember I've just written about when I landed on the Garvelax, and, you know, I couldn't put my tent up fast enough before I went and explored. It was like being 15 again. I just wanted to just run around the island, and I had the island to myself. And it was this incredible landscape of rocky knolls with beautifully purple, with tops of purple heather, but in between sort of rank vegetation, sort of typical Argyle, almost rainforest-like vegetation with ferns and brackens and things like that. It was just a magical landscape, but also incredibly fun. And you know, that allowing myself to be joyful and to be, you know, rather than caging myself and putting myself in the box and saying, come on Nick, grow up, you know, you've got to get your tent sorted, get your food on the go, you know, plan your next day, just go and have fun. And I think that again, if I was to come down to, when I do come down, let's say when I do come down, you know, we look at running a one-day workshop where we kind of do things like that, where we connect with our inner child. We look at how we open up our awareness and sort of allow ourselves, or give ourselves permission to give ourselves that time and space, because often we are so driven to be moving from one state of being to the next, you know, from moving from work to being at home to being a parent to being caregiver to being an employee to, you know, whatever it might be, to you know, and not giving ourselves that space to just spend half an hour or an hour just to sit and absorb the space around us. Yeah,
that's wonderful. The wise words. I love that. I love that. And as you say, you know, I think you've inspired people. You know, for me, if I can, you know, it's been exciting to hear more about what's out there in the big wide world, the risks, the adventure, the you know, the explorer mindset. But it's wonderful that you're saying, you know, this is also this is closer than it. It doesn't have to be in Tobermory. It can be outside your window. It can be in your garden. It can be, you know, just following, as you say, what's around the bend in the river. You know, just walk a little bit further. Yeah. You know, just be present, breathe, and just stay connected. I'm going to leave, if I can, to our listeners. You know, I'm Simon King. This has been Nature Space with Haythes, and we've been talking to Nick Ray, and hopefully, you know, you'll know a lot more about his life afloat. Can I leave the final words to you, if that's okay, Nick, and just finish off anything you'd like to share, any wise words, or just, you know, anything?
Crikey. A word of appreciation, really. And I think, you know, the ability to offer my wisdom is because people are willing to hear the words. And I think that's a really powerful relationship. I think that's really important. And I think it's a huge honor for me to be seen as somebody who has words of wisdom to share, and I really appreciate it. And again, I think it's just about easing up on ourselves, giving ourselves permission to feel, to experience, and to take time, really, to notice what's around us. Yeah. And the quality of our relationship with what's around us. Yeah. Yeah. So wishing everybody the very, very best for a new year, or the year ahead. So okay. Thank you. Thank you, Simon. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for talking to Nature Space with us. Thank you.